Hello, my name is Jennifer. I'm a grateful believer in Jesus, and I'm finding some victory over alcohol and depression. I was born on August 13, 1981, to two adoring parents. My earlier childhood contains many happy memories. I gave my life to Christ at the age of 5 during a Bible study run in my neighborhood. I tried my best to always do what God would want me to do. I have fond memories of building tree forts and running around the neighborhood with my gang of friends. We went to church every week, and I sang in the children's choir. Things were amazing until right before junior high. A few key things happened before life fell apart. Both of my best female friends moved away. My first love interest moved halfway across the U.S. after our brief period of dating. I started junior high without a single friend and was desperate to fit in with others. I found a peer group that wasn't healthy for me. My best friend was verbally and physically abusive. I almost got expelled from school after a fight we had, which turned physical. I didn't realize that I was being abused, so I didn't say anything to parents or teachers. I just wanted to fit in. I started lying to my parents about my friends, knowing that they wouldn't approve. I wouldn't tell them who I was hanging out with. I don't have a lot of memories from this year. I had begged my parents for years to send me to private Christian school because all my friends from church went to private school. In eighth grade, my wish came true, but another nightmare was about to begin. I met my next boyfriend at that school. He was sweet at first, and we dated for about a week. Then he turned physically, verbally, and emotionally abusive. I realized what was going on this time and went to my parents. My parents went to the church and were told that it was just kids being kids. Because my father's abuser was high up in the church, nothing was done about the abuse. The abuse continued throughout my eighth grade year, even though I had broken up with the boy. I found solace in hiding in the music room at lunch, playing piano and singing to God. At the end of this year, the teachers told my parents that I had finally earned my place among the other students. This fueled my mistrust of adults, since they were implying that I had to go through all the abuse. I kept trying to understand why the abuse was happening to me when I tried to be the best Christian I could be. Philippians 2:13 says, "For it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose." It would be years later before I would be able to grasp why my story had this heartache. Ninth grade, I started my third school in 3 years, where I was bullied by the popular crowd. It was at this point that I became angry. Angry at God for allowing things to happen. Angry at my parents for not protecting me. Angry at all my peers who only seemed to want to hurt me. I tried smoking for the first time and began skipping school. I forged notes so that my parents wouldn't know. I begged my parents to send me back to public school, which I felt was better than where I was, and they relented in 10th grade. In 10th grade, I started my fourth school in 4 years, returning to the public school system. By then, it was too late. I felt like the world was against me, and I was going to have to fight my hardest so that others wouldn't hurt me again. I began smoking marijuana to ease the pain of the past abuse. I smoked regularly and skipped classes. I wanted nothing to do with a God who would allow bad things to happen to good people. I started to develop a reputation being the biggest, baddest female at the school. I figured no one would mess with me if I was tough enough. I didn't let others get close, and I pushed my parents away. The next 10 years were spent fighting, smoking, and becoming more angry with God and the world. I survived several rapes and multiple sexual assaults. I was betrayed by my best friend after I had sacrificed deeply for her. We had unwisely taken a ride with several people that we didn't know. They drove us up into the hills outside Newburgh, and I understood that someone would have to stay in the car if they were to drive us home. I felt like I would handle the sexual assault better than my best friend, so I stayed in the car. Less than a year later, this same best friend would sleep with my boyfriend. I used alcohol and marijuana to drown out my feelings and to be happy. I had sex with lots of different people in an attempt to fill the hole of loneliness in my life. I held on to my anger like it was a lifeline. I began to think that there was something inherently wrong with me, that others seemed to know that I was easy to hurt. This is the time when I started to hate myself. I struggled with thoughts of killing myself, knowing that I could actually never follow through and hurt my parents that way. Even though I didn't want to hurt my parents, I desperately wanted to die. I stole from stores and from others. I developed a large repertoire of curse words that I used liberally. Most of all, I turned my back on God. I stopped reading my Bible and praying. I went to church only because my parents forced me to. I felt like he had abandoned me and I wanted nothing to do with him. In 2004, I got a DUI. That scared me sober for a little bit. I spent a lot of time beating myself up for driving while intoxicated. I was ashamed that I had let my addiction get that far, yet I still wouldn't call it an addiction at that time. I pretended that I had just had one temporary lapse in judgment. Things settled a bit when I got married and moved to northern New York, where my husband was stationed in the Army. I still struggled with promiscuity and multiple affairs. Drinking was a part of married military life, so my addiction was socially acceptable. I felt like I had finally found my people. We tried a church in the town we were stationed next to, but didn't attend more than a handful of times. God was more of an afterthought than anything else for me. My drinking slowed down when we began to try to get pregnant and stopped when we found out I was. I had 9 months of sobriety, the longest I had been sober since the age of 21. My daughter was a joy and a trial at the same time. She had colic and would rarely sleep unless on someone's chest. I struggled to form an attachment bond with her. When she was 3 months old, my husband told me he wanted a divorce. He was struggling with severe PTSD after his tour in Iraq, but I was blindsided. He wanted us to move to Hawaii with him and live like we were married, just not actually be married anymore. I decided to come back to Portland to be with family. My daughter and I moved back in with my parents, which kept my drinking under control. However, once we moved into our own place, my addiction came back tenfold. My now former husband was stationed in Hawaii, so I was the only caregiver for my daughter. I remember sleeping off hangovers on the pull-out couch so the television could babysit my daughter. I would take advantage of nights off by going to the bar to shoot pool and get drunk. I allowed people that I barely knew inside my house to try to satiate the loneliness that was still there. I got in contact with a soldier that I had had an affair with who might have fathered my daughter. He seemed to want a relationship and then disappeared from the face of the earth. It took me months to track him down, and he acted like we hadn't made any plans at all. This cemented my mistrust of men. In my mind, all men were either abusive or liars or both. I spent the next 10 years continuing to drown myself in alcohol, hoping that the pain would miraculously disappear someday. I went to school events with alcohol in my water bottle. I always drank just enough to be drunk, but not enough to interfere with my work. I was a functioning alcoholic. I would go to the work in the morning, pick up my daughter after work, go home and start drinking. I hid my drinking from my child, my parents, my coworkers, and my church family. I was attending church again, but mainly for the companionship of others. I sang on worship team, but only because I enjoyed singing and the accolades that it brought. There was a brief time that I tried to rekindle my relationship with God, but the drinking drove me to guilt that was far heavier. I decided that God didn't want to waste his time with someone like me. Later, I would realize that God wanted nothing more than to be close to me and have a relationship with me. My son was conceived in 2009 on a first date. I jumped into the relationship with his father, thinking I was doing the right thing for my son. As time went on, I began to realize that yet again, here was another man who was abusive. I ended our engagement when I was 5 months pregnant. Now I was facing being a single parent to two children instead of just one. At my five-month ultrasound, I was sideswiped. My son had a birth defect. Instead of his intestines growing inside his abdomen, he had a hole in a sac that was holding them. I believe that God was trying to get my attention, and he did, albeit temporarily. I was told to expect that my son to spend 1 to 3 months in the NICU while they stretched his abdomen to hold all the things that were currently outside of it. God performed a miracle, and my son's abdomen grew to the exact size it needed to be. He required minor surgery after birth and was able to come home within a week. I had a renewed faith that maybe God wasn't only allowing bad things to happen. I renewed my faith walk with God and started reading my Bible and praying. But the guilt from drinking after my son was born didn't go away. Eventually, I got tired of having to ask for forgiveness for my drinking, so I stopped praying altogether. The last few years of my addiction were the worst. I was emotionally unavailable to my kids, my mood was erratic, and they never knew what might set me off. I started to self-harm as a coping mechanism. I went to work hungover and rarely spent sober time with my kids. My daughter took over raising my son, and I really didn't mind that. After all, it meant I had fewer responsibilities to deal with. At the end of my active addiction, I began to contemplate suicide. I reasoned that my kids were better off without me and that no one would actually miss me if I was gone. My depression was so deep that I didn't even care about how this would affect my parents. I thought about all the lies and the covering up over the years. I hated myself and didn't feel like I was bringing anything worthwhile to this earth. I would cry out to God in my pain, and then I would ease it with more alcohol. In December 2020, I tried to end my life and almost succeeded. Fortunately, God wasn't done with me yet. It may be an understatement, but I realized something had to change. I had been to AA, but it wasn't a good fit. I knew about CR, so I looked up the information. I was still using when I walked through the doors of CR for the first time. In fact, I would re-gift my blue chip to myself weekly for the first few months. But God never gave up on me, and I started trying to rebuild my relationship with him. Philippians 4:13 says, "I can do everything through him who gives me strength." Finally, my sobriety started to stick. I kept coming back every week, especially when I didn't feel like it. I began to trust my forever family here at CR and started opening up in small group. I realized that denial had held me tightly for years, and the only way to freedom was giving it all to God. I completely surrendered to God over and over, it seemed, and I still continue to surrender daily. I won't lie, the first few months of sobriety were brutal. First, I dealt with shame around renewing my blue chip every week. However, I never felt judgment from my sisters. My struggle was met with love and encouragement. When I finally quit, I knew I needed more than my own willpower. I'd had a bad experience with an AA sponsor, so I was hesitant to trust again. God kept nudging my heart until I approached someone to be my sponsor, and I have been very lucky to have an accountability partner whose walk is so similar to mine. I had used alcohol as an all-purpose fix for 20 years. Now I needed to rely on God, my sponsor, and my accountability partner. By God's grace and power, that's exactly what I did. Romans 8:37 says, "No, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loved us." Slowly but surely, the cravings for alcohol decreased and the craving for God increased. I bought the CR Bible and devotional and used them to purposely make time for God every day. I got into a step study, which was a huge turning point in my recovery. I learned all the ways that I had been in denial. I was challenged to take a deep and hard look into my present and past behaviors. The step study pushed me to own things that are mine to own and to let go of the things that aren't mine. My inventory helped to set me free the pain of hiding and the built-up guilt and shame. The Serenity Prayer reminds us to have the courage to change the things that we can and to accept the things that we cannot change. Forgiveness was the most freeing of all, allowing me to cut toxic relationship ties that had festered for years. Slowly, because sometimes I take a while to get it, God began revealing patterns and character defects that had caused me problems. Through my stepsisters, he reminded me that I wasn't alone and that others struggled with similar things. Through every probing question, I felt God's presence and his peace. How are things different now? I'm steadily rebuilding the relationship with both of my children. I no longer deal with lying and guilt around not being my genuine self. I journal to keep a running list of what I've done well and what I'm struggling with. Then I offer those things up to Christ. Now when I'm struggling, I reach out to my support team. I'm so grateful for my sponsor and accountability partners for sticking with me, even when I seemed like I might have been a lost cause. I used to sing for accolades, and now I sing to worship God. I used to not be able to look at myself in the mirror, and now I look forward to being able to speak into the lives of others who struggle like I did. My life verse is Matthew 11:28-30. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. To the newcomer, keep coming back, even if you have to re-gift your blue chip every week. We will listen to you and support you and love you no matter what. I never thought that recovery was something that would stick for me, yet God is bigger and greater than anything in this world. He redeemed my story and allowed me to start fresh in my relationship with him and others. Galatians 5:1 says, "It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by a yoke of slavery." God wants to take your burden of slavery and exchange it for his redeeming love and transformation. Thank you for letting me share.